Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. For this week's literary review, we've invited our Toronto correspondent and book critic Christopher Frey to go over some of the month's releases in Canada. We'll be finding out why we love certain things and hate others with Tom Vanderbilt's new book You May Also Like, which looks at the way our taste is influenced by external factors. We'll take a look at In Between Days, Teva Harrison's latest addition to the graphic novel memoir genre, and we'll end with a social media hit turned book by American poet Melissa Broder to assess how easy it is to make the move from online to on the page. All that coming up on the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. What makes you who you are? Is it the label sewn into your t-shirt? Is it the magazine you clutch on the train? Maybe it's the place you choose to buy your morning coffee. New York-based writer Tom Vanderbilt has just released his new book, You May Also Like, which muses on how the opinions and preferences that define us are influenced by algorithms and how taste has moved online. Chris, welcome to the show. I guess there's only one place to start, really. Was this book to your taste? Sorry.
Somewhat to my taste. Do I get a star ranking here or a number out of 10 that I get to choose? I mostly like it. I think it's a useful book. It's even at only over, like, what about 200 pages? He draws on a vast amount of research here. And to be honest, a lot of it is contradictory, as it should be, from neuroscience, sociology, food science, psychology, aesthetics, philosophy, and toward the end, even the work of judges in show cat competitions. And as you say, all of this to look at the ways in which tastes are shaped or constructed by our personal histories, biases, you know, myriad psychological and contextual factors. Sometimes we tend to like things because other people do, and sometimes we like things for very much the opposite reason. Our preferences become markers of our individuality and difference. And so if I was to mark out my own individuality, I might fault this book for not quite. I mean, it's good on the as a survey of the research and the studies out there, but it's less good at the synthesis, and I'm not necessarily asking for, you know, a single through line or thought or thesis to sort of consolidate all this material, because that would be impossible. And as we can tell, like, many of our own tastes, once we interrogate them, are quite conflicting and contradictory. But he doesn't do enough with the material. You feel like he could go a step beyond with some of his own original insights, especially where he's looking at the algorithms and recommendation engines that, you know, guide so much of our preferences and taste. Well, actually, what the culture we consume today, and tease away some of the implications that might have for culture more broadly. And I also would have wished that he was a little more present. Well, he is there in the story and drops a few anecdotes at times about his own making of preferences. You feel like he's rather vague about it, oddly, and he'll drop an anecdote about his initial excitement about getting into punk rock, but leave us a little short on details, so we don't really get a sense of the formulation of his own taste when the opportunity is right there before him.
That's interesting. I mean, you say that he doesn't really have a hugely strong argument going through, and that's not a problem, but he does deal with some quite controversial topics. I mean, the use of data, you know, obviously Netflix and Facebook analyze our likes and dislikes kind of in an attempt to understand what our taste is. Does he not really take a stance on that then?
Not really, no. And that, again, is probably the main fault with the book. There's a bit of a structural issue, too, that chapter on predictive analytics comes, I think it's the second or third chapter in the book. So it's about, you know, a third of the way through. And then yet the book ends with his chapter on expert opinion and judging in contests like the aforementioned cat show competitions. You feel like, you know, in terms of the broader implications of the material that he's dealing with, that's really where the story should end up, is looking ahead to the future. If we're talking about some of this historical research going back to the 19th century and some of the philosophical thinkers and sociologists who've looked into the acquirement of taste and discernment, you know, one expects that there's a huge conversation to be had about the influence, you know, these predictive engines will have on our future. And that conversation, at least, doesn't doesn't quite happen.
It's interesting. It's been compared, this book, to another book that's recently received quite a lot of press and has just come out in Canada, I believe. It's called Dan Fox's It's Pretentiousness, Why It Matters. How do you compare these two books?
Yeah, well, I think Vander's built book suffers by the comparison. I think in terms of the breadth of the research, it's extremely useful book for critics and for, you know, individuals alike who care to question, like, why do I like the things I like? And all these things that become markers of our identity. Pretentiousness, by focusing on, I think, one aspect of our, we'll say, duality, you know, the tension between authenticity, which is a quality that in contemporary culture has become valorized, and pretentiousness, which is one that we tend to frown upon. And yet, through Dan's much more artful examination, I think, and somewhat more distilled and focused, he takes us to a much more interesting place that I think is more likely to have us asking questions about our own interactions with culture and why we identify with the things that we do.
So maybe read Tom Vanderbilt's book, but also read Dan Fox's as well. You may also like Taste in an Age of Endless Choice by Tom Vanderbilt is out now, published by Simon & Schuster and Knopf. Pretentiousness, Why It Matters by Dan Fox is also out now, published by Fitzcarraldo. We turn now to a memoir in the shape of a graphic novel. In Between Days is by Teva Harrison, an artist whose comics appear regularly on The Walrus's website. This particular publication takes a look at Harrison's life as she deals with being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer. Chris, we hear plenty of memoirs on this subject. In fact, we reviewed one just last week. But we don't get many in this format, the graphic novel. How effective is it?
Yeah, it's deeply moving. There's almost a certain naivete and directness about it. You know, Harrison was diagnosed with stage 4 metastatic breast cancer. She was only 37. And the average prognosis for this is only a couple of years. And so here she's mixing black and white comic strips with short personal essays. And through both, she probes her drastically altered sense of self, the intense bouts of isolation, how one's emotions both shrink and expand, the inability to plan for the future, and the unpredictability of knowing how one might feel physically or mentally from one day to the next. And I think there's something unique about this rough, sketchbooky. I mean, I will say her style is by turns somewhat naive and whimsical. It's a bit of a roughly drawn hand, but there is that sense that her hand is present and these vulnerabilities are foregrounded. There's something about its style and attention to domestic detail, especially under this most extreme of diagnoses, that recalls the comics of Roz Chast, who you've probably seen many of her pieces in The New Yorker. Meanwhile, the short essays have this very disarming, diaristic quality as she struggles to give her body its best chance of survival and transform the terminal into the merely chronic. So I think it's extremely affecting in that way. And it also largely follows Susan Sontag's dictum, you know, that we avoid the stigma of metaphors, especially those military or moralizing metaphors when we talk, write, or make art about an illness like cancer. I mean, how helpful is it that we so often speak in military terms of fighting cancer? What does it mean when a person, as it were, you know, I'm using, you know, scare quotes, loses their battle? And yet there remains the very human necessity to make meaning out of our suffering, the random hurts of the universe and what might seem like fate. And In Between Days strikes a very poignant and even instructive middle way as she documents this Sisyphean struggle to attain some new sense of normalcy.
Right. I mean, you mentioned that there's a kind of naivete in the drawings and perhaps the text as well. Is that what the graphic novel format brings to this? A kind of a slight contrast, I guess, in that juxtaposition between the pictures and the content being so obviously so grave.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's fairly stereotypical to say that, you know, assign words like raw or confessional. I mean, it is both those things, but there's something unique about her style in it not being perhaps as fully formed as you might expect from, you know, more sophisticated or, you know, more veteran, I guess, comics artists. She started drawing these pieces after seeing a psychiatrist that her oncologist had recommended her, is a way of giving shape to what she's feeling. And I think that brings this incredible immediacy to her work. And when I use a word like naivete or whimsical, I don't want to downplay the quality of the work. It's merely an aspect of the work, I think, that just enhances the impact that it has. And as she explains, I think it's in her introduction, you know, once the story was outside my head, I could let go a little and process, you know, I think, more easily everything that she had to grips with. And this style of vignettes or episodic approach to the structure of the book works really well and kind of mimics the fabric of the life that she's living.
In Between Days by Teva Harrison is out now, published by House of Anansi Press. Our final book is called So Sad Today by the American poet Melissa Broder. This collection of darkly humorous essays and poems explores Broder's battles with addiction and depression. But they actually started out as a Twitter account. Chris, first of all, take us through how this work actually came to be published.
Yeah, as you say, it has its origins in an anonymous Twitter account that Broder began in 2012, which gave a platform to the thoughts of this young suffering from anxiety, depression, panic disorder, and a litany of other probably related conditions conveyed in a blackly mordant sense of humor. And the account gradually, you know, surged in popularity, going from perhaps three to a few hundred thousand, including the likes of Lena Dunham and Katy Perry, who themselves sort of retweeted bits from So Sad Today. And it was only last year in an interview with Rolling Stone that Broder revealed herself to be the author of So Sad Today. And as you mentioned, though, she was already a published poet, so she doesn't necessarily come to it as an amateur. And it's her poetry. I mean, even though I think this book will immediately, or I think on a first approach, people look at this as another sort of narcissistic, you know, millennialist self-confessional. There is a great sense of poetry that comes through. One reviewer, Haley Mlotek, writing for The New Yorker, nailed something of the tone and the content when she described it as a stylized expression of feminine despair. And as a collection of essays, it's a deeply penetrating book. And, you know, it covers a vast and troubling landscape of Broder's woes. You know, there's her teenage bouts with anorexia and binge eating, later the alcoholism and drug use and sexual encounters she sought to tamp down her anxiety, depression, and more generalized existential anguish. And her writing style, which has, you know, been marinated in internet vernacular, and this first-person obsessiveness is something readers will either take to or not, but there is this rapid, when it's great, there's this rapid-fire delivery full of biting, declarative sentences and drop-dead punchlines. It's a bit of a high-wire act, but when it works, these essays have more the feel of prose poems, really, than they do self-essays. And at the end, there's this, you know, again, wickedly stone-cold, you know, sense of comedy about her own travails. I mean, it's visceral, it's bleak, it's self-consciously deflective, and it's kind of like a being in nothingness for the internet age.
Right. I mean, what does it actually look like on page? I always find myself asking this when a Twitter account becomes a book. I mean, how much has it been kind of edited? How much of it is new material that wasn't on the Twitter account?
I mean, I can't say I was a follower of So Sad Today, but no, most of the book is constructed just as fairly, as they look, you know, fairly conventional personal essays. So there might be bits or riffs that are taken originating from So Sad Today, but there are some essays, and they're among my favorite. Let me just grab them here, where she experiments with form. There's one, I took the internet addiction quiz. And as I kind of referenced there, like the internet and social media completely permeates this whole dissection and experience of her personal troubles or struggles with mental illness. And there's another one, Google Hangout with My Higher Self, which is just done as you'd expect, as sort of like, you know, two people talking to each other as a form of script. So there's a lot of that. There's a lot of tweets that or sexting conversations, but they're normally put within the context of a personal essay. So it's not just a book of tweets, but it is a fairly, for the most part, accomplished meditation on her own personal experience.
And do you get the sense that there is a kind of a pervading argument here? I mean, obviously, you've mentioned that, you know, the internet and online life takes quite a sort of prominent role. But is there a kind of an argument that, I guess, is interwoven the whole way through?
I don't know that there's an argument other than, I think, shining a light. It sounds a bit cliche, but, you know, shining a bit of a light on various mental illnesses. But even though I think Broder now is in her mid-30s, and again, the expectation might be that this will appeal to a fairly limited cohort, I found, as somebody about 10 years her senior, it incredibly relatable. I mean, she's particularly insightful about the internet and social media and what it's doing to us. She describes the internet itself as being like a shitty dopamine party. And, you know, I love how she frequently describes the liking of social media posts as a kind of phantom sexual exchange. So there's a lot on that order. And I love this wonderful digression about her use of iPhones when she goes to the toilet, and that most of the time she spends on the toilet is spent actually on her iPhone, which I think may be more common than we probably acknowledge.
I think on that note, we will have to leave it. So Sad Today by Melissa Broder is out now, published by Grand Central Publishing and Scribe Publications in the UK. And I'm afraid that does bring us to the end of today's show. Thanks very much to my guest, Christopher Frey. You've been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. This show was produced by Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow. We'll be looking at film. But for now, goodbye from me, and thanks very much for listening.